Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me today is acclaimed writer Matt's Alexis Nolent, who is the winner of the Eisner, nominated for the Eisner Award in previous years, but this year he is writing Snowpiercer the prequel. And we are here to talk about that since part two starts in September. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello. Hello. I'm very well. I'm in Paris. Hello from Paris. I guess I was nominated twice at the Eisners, but I guess you can say a two-time loser.
two-time almost winner. I like that better.
Yeah.
So how did you get onto the project of doing a prequel for Snowpiercer?
Actually, it started off in New York. I was invited at the 2016 Comic-Con in New York, and so was artist Jean-Marc Rochette, the Snowpiercer artist. And that's where we met, and we hit it off, basically. And when the time came that he was asked to do a prequel to Snowpiercer, he thought about me, and then that's how it got started.
So did you two work on ideas for how the prequel would unfold?
Absolutely. We did a couple of brainstorming stations, Paris style, which means cafes and restaurants. I had my notebook, and in no time I had a notebook filled with notes and ideas and scenes, and it went very, very fast and very smoothly. And Rochette had pretty precise ideas about the characters, especially for the Zeng character, the Chinese mogul, the guy who created the train. I came up with a name, but he came up with a character, and then that's how it started. And it's a three book series. The first one is about how the train came about, how it was created and why. The second is how the people got on board, and the third one, which is not yet published and which is not yet done actually even in France, is basically the beginning of the journey of the train.
Nice. So how long did it take to develop the story you two wanted to tell? Because you said this is in three volumes, so like volume one was already out, volume two is just now coming out. How long did it take to get the entire arc of the story you wanted to tell done?
It was actually quite fast, because worked very efficiently together. We had we never got into any conflict of ideas and everything. It was a really ongoing fluid process all the way through. And on the other hand, Rochette is a very, very fast drawer artist, so he has a. Basically, every week he would do something like 10 pages, you know. So I had to be very, very fast writing the script, so I could feed him enough pages every day, every week. We had a good time. We had a lot of fun. Actually, it was a lot of fun for me to write the speeches of the sect-like characters. It was very much a fun project.
Sounds like he was challenging you to keep up with him.
Exactly, which is usually the other way around, you know.
So for the prequel, were there any elements or story points you wanted to be able to make sure that the fans would connect to the main series? And were there any changes or different adaptations from the TV series that impacted what you two were putting together?
You know, this is a prequel. So we are before the movie, before the original comic book, graphic novels, and before the series. And it's a long time before. But we do have to keep in mind what's in the books, what's in the series, and play around those things. And we don't want to be in contradiction with those, you know.
Right.
So, yes, we have to... keep in mind, but we still have some room and some freedom to build the story around those things to make the prequel compelling enough and interesting enough and relevant, because that's one thing we were very interested in, which was to make it relevant for today's world, you know?
Yeah, and to the right, and to the original story as well. You want to make sure that even though people have read the main story, you have to make the prequel interesting enough, even though they say, well, I know where this is going, but this is interesting enough that I want to see how they get there.
Exactly. The main thing is how do we get where we are in the stories that we all know. And that's where the, basically we have to be creative, you know, it's all about the how, which is interesting because, you know, in my opinion, all the stories have been told, and it's all a matter of how.
Can you talk about the story that was in Volume 1 and how, you know, that jumps into Volume 2?
The Volume 1 is all about the creation of the train. So the main issue, basically, the focus of it was... who is creating the train and why? And because the guy, obviously, who created the train is a visionary, as he foresaw what would happen. And basically, book one, I was very interested in all the, you know, what we call the preppers, you know, I think it's an American world, right? Mm-hmm. People who get ready for the end of the world and want to prepare for it. I have this theory that people, the preppers, are actually hoping for it. They want to see it. They want to be there, and they want to be among the survivors. I don't think I want to be among the survivors myself. If I can't play my funk records and jazz records and read my books, then I'm not sure I'm interested in life anymore. So, and I certainly won't run into the woods and try to catch a rabbit to eat it raw, you know. I don't think I'm ready for that. But basically, that's the focus of the story. It's the preppers, the different options in a world that is collapsing, which is, a classic sci-fi theme, of course. But the preppers, and this particular prepper, who is loosely based on, you know, the billionaires like Musk and Bezos and those kind of guys who have unlimited means to do whatever they want. And this one is building the train. So that's the focus of it.
Yeah, I'm the prepper thing. And I'm not sure I ever looked at it quite like that. It's like they're preparing for the worst, but also hoping it comes around so they could tell everybody they were right. It's like they may not be actively burning down the world, but they're not doing a whole lot to prevent it either. So that's an interesting dystopia.
I think there is a bit of a narcissistic thing that they hope for it. You know, they want to be at the end of the world. They don't want the world to survive them. I think it's a bit of a narcissism, kind of approach to it. I have a friend who is a bit of a, in French we say, looking for it, collapsed guy, you know, obsessed guy.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he says that at some point we're going to have to fight for food or water, you see his eyes light up, you know, like he's actually looking forward to it. And actually, he gave me the idea. He doesn't know it, but he was the inspiration for a lot of it. I said, ooh, you know, the first time I saw him like that, I thought, actually, he hopes for it. You know, anyone would suppose we fear it. We, you know, we we don't want to see the end of the world. But I'm thinking those guys actually do.
Man, there are probably a million different stories in there that could use that as a jumping off point. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Gonna have to mull that one over a little bit more. But talk a little bit about how you got into writing for comics.
It was basically by chance. I never really thought about it until the day when I met an artist who is a rather famous artist now in France. His name is Chosy, Jean-Christophe Chosy. At the time, I was very young, and I was thinking I would be writing novels. You know, literature is my first love, but I've always read lots and lots of comic books ever since I was a kid. I have lots and lots of them, and it was my obsession as a kid. And then one day I had dinner with Chosy by chance, as he was a friend of my father's. He was a teacher in the same school as my father. And he told me that he had a contract with a publisher for a comic book that he didn't know how to write. And I said, listen, I'll give it a shot if you want to. I was already writing my first novel at the time, and it got published a couple of years later. But I took a crack at it, and we showed what I did to the publisher, and the publisher said he liked it. So we actually did the book, and it came out, and it was my first book in 1990. Not my best one. I was recently asked to republish it, so I took the effort to read it again, which I had not done in 30 years. And I said, no, I don't want it republished. Unnecessary.
So what about telling a story with the graphic, the art component, appeals to you most?
I think there are mainly two things. First is that, like I said, I read a lot of it as a kid, and I think it's extremely rich medium where you can tell, especially in the French comic book world, you know, you can tell any kind of story you want, any topic, any subject, any manner, any structure, any you have an amazing free world ahead of you. And also you have complete freedom as an author. The publishers very, very rarely get in the way or ask for things or to change or to be more proper, or, you know, you do have complete creative freedom, which is quite different from my experiences in other media like video games, which I worked a lot for, or TV, or, you know, novel and comic books are where you have the most freedom. And in France, there is a huge audience for it. There is a public that is really curious for many different forms of art and storytelling and topics. So the more I do it, and the more I like it, actually.
So you mentioned you grew up reading comics. Which were the titles that impacted you most before you got into actually writing for them?
Oh, my childhood idol was a guy named Franquin. Maybe you know him. He's a Belgian artist and scriptwriter. Franquin is spelled Franquin. He wrote Gaston Lagaffe and Spirou et Fantasio. I don't know if you know those things. He's an amazing artist. You know, I'm friends with a great American artist named Jeff Darrow. Mm-hmm. You probably know him. We were very, very close for a while. And I asked him once who his favorite artist is, and he said Franquin. Franquin is that big. I was amazed. But Franquin, but also, you know, Hugo Pratt, who wrote Corto Maltese. I'm sure you have Corto Maltese in English, right?
I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that name.
If you don't, you should immediately start a company and publish it. And those, you know, Gigé, those stories, I was big on a publisher named Dupuis. That was my main source of comic books. And interestingly enough, it's the only publisher I've never worked with.
That's funny. Worked with everyone except the one who influenced you so
Yeah,
much.
the one I grew up on, that's the one I never did a book with.
So are you currently just working on just the Snowpiercer prequel, or do you have some other projects or video games that you're also currently working on?
No, actually, you know, the Snowpiercer thing, I finished writing book number 3.
Okay.
So now the script is in the Rochette's hands, and I think he's working on the separate project now, and it's going to be his next work. Other than that, yes, I'm working on many comic books. I have the ongoing series The Killer, which you probably know, published in the US too, and there's going to be a movie soon, directed by David Fincher. And book number 16 is going to be published in France in October. Book number 6 of the series Tango is going to be released in October too. And I have a series of other books in the works at different stages. You know, the comic book is a rather slow process. I'm either working on the script, or the script is done and it's being drawn, or it's being colorized. So I have a number of books at different phases of completion. But enough to... I have 3 coming out in October and probably 5 next year.
So you've been busy.
I'm busy. I have to be. I'm also translating a novel right now, an American novel, for a French publisher. And I do, you know, consulting work for video games, but video games have a much stricter confidentiality policy than comic books.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same thing.
Do you
talk about comic books?
Do you do a lot of literary translations into French?
I think it's the 8th novel I've translated. But that's definitely something I absolutely love to do. And I've translated a few comic books too, including one of the volumes of the, you know, March, was very interesting to translate. And that's something I really, really enjoy doing.
Nice. It sounds like your love of literature and comics has really, really just impacted everything you do, and that's awesome to be able to work so closely with something you love.
Absolutely, and it doesn't feel like it's work, which is why I work all the time. And you know, the thing is that I came to literature through comic books, basically, because as a child I was reading much more comic books than novels and literature, and much to my mother's despair, because she was a French teacher and she thought comic books were for morons. But that's what drew me to reading, and now I read more literature than comic books. But I always say, you know, I'd rather read a good comic book than a bad novel, and a good novel than a bad comic book. I don't see the difference.
Well, it sounds like you get to pick from the best
of
both worlds. So that's got to be a bonus.
And one day I'll write other novels.
There you go. There you go. So where can folks find you online to keep track of your upcoming projects?
I do have a Facebook on which I post something every time I have a book that comes out, but that's about the extent of my presence. I believe in not being too present. Besides, I'm too busy.
Exactly, you're too busy. You just, you know, it's like, hey, here's a page, go to it. I'll get to it when I have time.
I'd rather do than talk about what I'm going to do.
There you go. There you go. Do you get out to? Before the pandemic hit, were you going to conventions to share your love of comics and art with fans?
Whenever I'm invited, I very gladly go. The thing is, more and more, you know, especially around here, they tend to not invite the writers anymore. They only invite the artists. I hope the U.S. don't follow the same trend, because I really enjoyed going to the Comic-Con in New York and L.A. and possibly elsewhere, even though we cannot travel too much these days, but who knows. And maybe with the next killer, I get another shot at the Eisners.
There you go. We'll
maybe someday I'll win it.
We'll pull for you for that, and hopefully when the virus calms down and decides to, you know, go hibernate again, we'll find you at a convention where comics exactly. writers are invited.
And I had promised just before the COVID hit, I had promised my son he would go to the Comic-Con in San Diego with me. So he was very disappointed when it got canceled twice.
Yes.
Snowpiercer could have a shot at it too.
Yeah, that's entirely true for next year, right?
Exactly, because maybe book three will be out. And I think Rochette does an amazing job. You know, visually, he has something that's quite unique.
Yes, from what I've seen, it is visually compelling. It is a very, very encompassing tale.
Exactly. It might be a bit dark for an Eisner, because I noticed awards tend to go to things that you know, people can get together around, you know, not that dark.
Well,
that's my impression.
Well, either way, good luck in the upcoming Eisners, and we will keep an eye out for the next Eisners. And hope you get on that list too. But
I just want to go to the Comic-Con. I enjoy California.
Oh, one day when it's safe to socialize again, you'll get there.
Absolutely. And maybe New York. I'd love to go back to New York.
New York Comic-Con is a lot of fun.
I love it. I love New York, actually.
Awesome. Well, Alexis, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much for inviting me.
The book is Snowpiercer, the prequel, Volume 2, will be out in September from Titan Comics. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Slice of Sci-Fi.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's surveillance fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And once again, Snowpiercer, the prequel, Volume 2, Apocalypse, should be on shelves September 15th from Titan. And Volume 3, I believe, is still scheduled for sometime early 2022. And for that, we'll definitely keep an eye out. And also hope that Eisners will be in Alexis's future. So tell me, what graphic novels are you looking forward to this fall? Let me know. Send me an email, summer at sliceofscifi.com, or come on by the website, sliceofscifi.com, leave a comment on this episode, or, you know, hit me up on Twitter, at sliceofscifi. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review. Help us boost the signal, so to speak. And you can also do the same if you're a member of Podchaser. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support the efforts here with Slice of Sci-Fi and the other shows in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe that your pledges and donations are helping to keep online. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal and Ko-fi really do help keep the lights on around here. So for that, I am extremely grateful. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, you will be eligible for perks. Every month I pick a winning email address out of the hat, and that person gets to choose from a DVD, a Blu-ray, a 4K, or a book. I get a lot of review materials, and for space reasons, I can't keep all of it. So you all, my listeners, my fans, my supporters, you guys get first dibs. So that is my thanks to you. You can also check out the new Ko-fi page. That's ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi. I'm still working on filling out the rest of that page, as well as putting buttons on the website, on all the websites, actually, because supporting Slice of Sci-Fi, supporting Babylon Podcast, supporting Writers After Dark, supporting Charlie Jade, all of that helps, because all of those are hosted media and websites. Your support helps to pay to keep those online. So again, thank you for your support. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.